On Sunday, mild, 50 to 55. Celebrate New England's Wales Week at UK Gourmet. Stop by and sample something different from Wales every day until March 7th. Don't forget to sign up for the $200 raffle of all things from Wales. Find UK Gourmet in Bethel at 78 Stony Hill Road. I'm meteorologist Darren Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
From the WGCH Weather Center. For 2 hours, every Thursday night at 6, listen in and even converse with the man in the know regarding all matters Greenwich. Listen to Sam Romeo's show, Greenwich Matters, brought to you by Parsonage, where their philosophy is to assist you in living life your way. From the beach to the backcountry, education, recreation, or politics, learn all about it on Greenwich Matters, every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. on 1490 WGCH. The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. Spending money on other women, you're taking money from someone else.
All right, he's bringing us in. That's Ron Gentile, my new friend from Jeep Chrysler Dodge City.
Right.
You're the
whole city.
You're the whole city. You're taking over all of Greenwich. And so Ron Gentile, also known as
Ronnie G.
Ronnie G. And so you came in tonight to help us bring a little music to the studio, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How's everything over at Jeep Chrysler Dodge City?
Good. We just closed out the month of February, and it was a good month, and we're looking forward to March. And
how many cars? You told me they sell like 100 cars a month out of there.
Yeah, we do about 100 cars a month.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you were the head salesman?
I'm number two.
You're number two?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong
I
with
try
that,
harder.
Ron. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I'm Noreen Ehrlich. This is Defy and Hustle Radio, and I'm glad everybody's here tonight. So we have our engineer, Sean, in the house tonight, and we got Ron. And I just want to let you know that next week, next Wednesday, my guest will be the senator, formerly known as Alex Bergstein. I read in the paper that she's changed her name back to her family name, which is Kasser. So Senator Alex Kasser, who I really love when she comes on the show because she gives us an update and her opinions on what's going on in the state of Connecticut and what should be going on in the state of Connecticut. So she'll be on, and I hope you listen next week. And then the week after that, I have on Catherine Curtin, who is one of the aesthetic nurse practitioners. Let me try and articulate. Aesthetic nurse practitioners at Greenwich Medical Spa, and she'll be talking to us about how to stay beautiful and young despite the coronavirus. So she'll be in the week after that. Today, I am bringing you, because my brain goes in 5,000 directions, I'm bringing you, it's not the coronavirus. It's not the Super Tuesday results. It is a different crisis that can grab our attention, but it's not necessarily it's another shift that's going on in our culture that I think we're so preoccupied now with coronavirus and the politics, but there is another shift that's taking place, and it's called the impact of artificial intelligence on our lifestyles, and especially on our workforce. And I work with clients. I help them grow their businesses. I help them to get more clients. I help them to just sort of deal with all the changes that are happening as we go through this paradigm shift into a new economy and really a new way of life. And I'm always fascinated by people who used to, a whole variety of things, but one of them is people who really have been in their careers for decades, very successfully. They've got mastery. They may be the best in their careers, and yet their jobs, their roles in the community, the value that they're getting paid for their services keeps going down and down and down and down, and they are ever more increasingly at the mercy of algorithms. And some of the people who are in their 50s and 60s really aren't that computer savvy. And so what's happening is, despite their higher education and expertise, true mastery over their industries, they went from making maybe hundreds an hour, and now they're making 70 an hour and barely getting any work. So I figured, let me do a little research, as my brain will do, is take in way too much information and then throw it out to you in the audience, but into what is going on with artificial intelligence and its impact on normal people, as Andrew Yang, who ran for president, as he puts it. A few weeks ago, I did a show on the gig economy, because nowadays, if you don't have a full-time job, generally speaking, you are working gigs. You're taking work where you can get it. It can be working for a company that it would seem like it's full-time, but you're still getting a 1099 and you're not getting any benefits, versus the old days when you worked with the company pretty much indefinitely and you got a W-2 and your employer gave you benefits. A lot of people are working in this gig economy now, and more people I know are just plain unemployed. They don't have health insurance, even though they're living in towns in Westchester and Fairfield. That's it. They're stopped. They're dead in their tracks. Oh, let me change that. They're just stopped in their tracks. And so I'm me with the CFO brain, the former chief financial officer brain that has to see the big picture and has to see how all the systems work, wanted to go out and see what's going on with the artificial intelligence and our its impact on our work life. Anyway, Andrew Yang. So his book was sitting on my desk at home, and he wrote a book called The War on Normal People, The Truth About America's Disappearing Jobs and Why Universal Basic Income is in Our Future. He's dropped out of the race, but now I understand a little bit more about what he's talking about. But let me catch my breath and start here at the beginning. To start my research, I looked into books written by futurists. Futurists. So do you know what a futurist is, Ron?
No.
No.
Somebody that looks to the future. They don't drive their car looking in the rearview mirror.
Very well said. So there's something called futurology, and it's trend analysis to predict and advise private and public organizations on matters such as global trends, possible scenarios taking place in those global trends, emerging market opportunities, and risk management around these changes. There's even an organization, there's many organizations, but there's one that's more famous called the World Future Society, and it was founded in 1966. I guess it's a little bit like the G7, but some of the members of this World Future Society include Buckminster Fuller, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist Gene Roddenberry, Carl Sagan, the architect, and Neil deGrasse Tyson. So this is interesting. But that is futurists. What these futurists do is many of them are writing books now about what to expect, and a lot of it is around artificial intelligence. So all you have to do, folks, is have your eyes open, and you'll see in the workforce that bank tellers have been replaced by ATM machines. Airline counter workers have been replaced by kiosks. Janitors that work at The airports in the evenings are being replaced by robots that are used to clean the floors and clean the surfaces. So I think we can all legitimately say that our lives are being impacted by technology. Go ahead, Ron.
How about cars that drive themselves?
We're going to get to it. Is Jeep planning for a car that drives itself?
Not that I know of.
Not yet. I'm sure they are, actually, because in the background, you probably just don't know about it yet.
Probably.
I will talk about it, but it's a good point. That's one of the things. Actually, I think I was listening to either NPR News or Bloomberg News on the drive over to the station, and they were talking about driverless cars, and it sounds like they're right around the corner. There is a book called Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. And it's written by an American futurist called Martin Ford. He also writes for Wired magazine, and it was one of the business books of the year in 2015. And so it was described as mind-boggling. And it's not fear-mongering at all. He's really just looking at different areas of our lives and seeing how they're currently being impacted and then extrapolating that data. And there is an accelerated change of artificial intelligence on our labor market. I did think about the impact, as Andrew Yang was talking about, on income inequality, because it does seem that there are the people who are getting full-time jobs, running the organizations, creating organizations that are building these algorithms, and I'll talk about some of those, and then there's all the people that are working for them. Think about Uber. Somebody at the top of Uber is making a lot of money. The other people who are driving for Uber may or may not be making, but those are the gig workers. And so there is income inequality, and we can talk about immigration, but most of it, I think, can be attributed to artificial intelligence. And even watching a bit of the news today when they're talking about the results of the Super Tuesday elections, you've got Joe Biden, who represents, or the argument is he represents more of the old paradigm with the corporations behind him. And then you've got Bernie Sanders, who a lot of young people support. And he doesn't think Joe Biden's ideas go far enough, that there's this accelerated, imminent change that's happening in a lot of different areas. One of them is on the workforce, and Sanders represents those people. I think he represents those people who feel like they've been displaced. So it is showing up even in our politicians as of yesterday evening. It is having an impact on big ticket items like housing, education, healthcare. So let's explore what some of those trends will be around white collar jobs at risk, how it's transforming higher education, and the diminishing returns of higher education. Let's look into how it's going to impact healthcare, consumer behavior, and even money and our phones. So let's get into white-collar jobs. You're good with everything, Ron?
Yes.
All right, good. So white-collar jobs. It's interesting. As I said, there's a lot of professionals, and I know you're out there listening, who are overqualified and feel like your office, whether you're a doctor, lawyer, accountant, financial broker, healthcare worker, if you don't know how to brand yourself and get it out there on the internet, even if you do, in many cases, you are losing clients that you could arguably take care of better than your competitor, but you're losing them because your competitor has invested in marketing. There is, for example, one of the algorithms that is eliminating a white collar job is called It's called, it's by a company called Narrative Science. And this company is impacting a lot of industries, but apparently the financial services industry, government, retail. What Narrative Science does is, okay, you know how you're the expert and you are told to write content and put it out there, or maybe you have to write things to put it, about what you're seeing happen in your organization and put it out there? Well, what Narrative Science is doing is it's created algorithms that collect data from all sorts of sources outside and inside of your organization, and now you're out of work because this algorithm, and one of the names of it is called Quill, collects data from sources like your sales department, like your finance department, like from your transaction databases, websites, social media, and third-party data, and it creates articles. So now you don't have to create the article anymore. This algorithm knows how to speak and write in English and write an important article to tell you how to run your business or to tell your potential clients how to improve their businesses. Quill is being used to drive engagement with potential clients, and that's just an example of how content writers or experts who used to be out there writing are losing their jobs to a machine. It creates a cohesive narrative of business articles and other articles to put out there, and it even does the analytics and creates graphs. There's a specific aspect of this that is called in-q-tell. InQtel, which is the venture capital arm of the CIA, and the CIA uses Narrative Sciences, this company, to organize torrents of raw data it collects, all the raw data that's collected by U.S. intelligence agencies, because there's so much of it. So it's able to help with things like money laundering and anything else to just take this influx of data and put it into some sort of cohesive form so that people can start to decide what to do with the data. But so that's a way that we're both losing jobs, and it's also creating work for the people that are using it. Another example of a company that's affecting white-collar workers is called WorkFusion. And it's a startup, although maybe a little further along now. It's a startup out of New York City. And its motto is, bots that know your business. And what it says is it offers large organizations project execution that was once labor-intensive. It offers intelligent automation services. So basically what it does, if I understand it correctly, and folks, I'm sorry, I'm not a journalist. I just do a lot of research before I come on the show. But it takes information about the project that your business, your organization wants to complete, and it looks for ways to make it dramatically cheaper. And so it looks at ways to take that project and automate it. So whatever can be automated, it will automate. It looks for ways to use crowdsourcing and sees whatever's left has to be performed in-house. So basically what it's doing is you put your project that you need something done, you put it into the WorkFusion app or software, I should say, and it figures out how to drive, how to raise production as much as 70%, how to reduce all manual labor around it as much as it can and just leave what's left for in-house people, and also speed up the timing it will take to complete that project and deliver it. So it's continually trying to automate, even where it where you end up using people in-house to do the work, it's figuring out ways to even automate that. So so the Work Fusion and its software is figuring out ways to just really eliminate, it would seem, eliminate all the human workforce in order to complete projects. And they're doing business with educational institutions, law offices, law firms, medicine, banking and finance, insurers, and anti-money laundering is one of their big drivers. And so we're seeing more and more jobs for white-collar workers either being eliminated altogether or essentially turning into jobs that could be done by basically less skilled or unskilled workers. You enjoying this?
Yes,
you
very
are?
Much.
Okay, very
I
good.
Have a question.
You do? All right. I can see you writing it down while I'm talking.
Yeah.
This is Ron.
The articles, in other words, the software that writes articles, okay, can that be used for newspapers like the New York Times or WAPO, Washington Post?
I imagine it could. I don't know that. I imagine it's used. I don't know that they're writing the articles directly, and I don't know if those two organizations are using it. But I could certainly figure out where if there's an influx of information that this what was it called, Quill, and narrative science could be used just to amalgamate all the information and choose which stories are trending.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what, when you go online and you see what's trending, basically it's telling you what's trending and gathering information. So I imagine they're using something like that there. I guess if you have the money in these large organizations, that's what you'd use something like that.
It's like, let's say you Google a Gibson guitar, and all of a sudden, you're on the computer, and it shows Gibson.
Right,
the ads pop right up.
Right, and then they keep going after you.
Right.
And when I study to do my shows, and the shows vary each week so much, I get so many hits for. I'm going to get hits on for the next few weeks about data, whatever it is, narrative sciences, because you've got big data. I used to work in tech industry a little bit because I was doing business development for a lot of tech firms because I lived in India for a while and a lot of the Indian workforce is in IT. And so I used to go to San Jose, actually, and it was just when big data, it was still a little bit unknown, but everybody was going crazy with its potential. And first of all, I realized I don't belong in it was a different type of person that in San Jose at a tech conference.
Valley?
I don't know about Silicon San Jose itself. I just remember this conference. I showed up in a red dress and my blonde hair and stuff like that, and I looked really, really out of place. Do you want to go to commercial, Ron? You want to work our way into a commercial? All right, we got Ron Gentile. He's going to play us into commercial, and I'll be back. This is Noreen Ehrlich talking about artificial intelligence and its impact on our workforce.
This is dedicated to my daughter, Melissa, who's turning 38 in 10 days.
Oh, wow.
Crossroads seem to come and go. Gypsy flies from coast to coast, knowing many loving done. They're in sorrow, having fun. But back home the gypsy runs to sweet Melissa.
Good evening. If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike, it's a 33-minute ride from the state line in Greenwich up to Route 7 in Norwalk. And the northbound Merritt Parkway, a 26-minute trip from Greenwich up to Norwalk on the Merritt. A girl in Kenya dreams of becoming a doctor. An elder in Guatemala dreams of being part of a community. Reach out. Change their world. It will change your own. Unbound.org. I'm Jay Trelace, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
An isolated rain shower tonight, then becoming mostly clear. Temperatures near 32. Plentiful sunshine tomorrow with highs in the upper 40s. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, 25 to 30, and rain showers developing Friday, 45. And becoming mostly sunny Saturday near 40, and more sun Sunday, mild, 50 to 55. I'm meteorologist Aaron Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
Are you a business owner who's suffering from what I call the entrepreneur's dilemma? That means you have a successful business, but you're so caught up in operations that you are overwhelmed, maybe you're capital constrained, or you just know that you can scale your business to another level, but you need help doing that. This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defiant Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and CPA in Wall Street's fast-paced real estate private equity industry, where I helped start up and turn around hundreds of underperforming businesses. Based on this know-how, I created a 100-day plan that I tailor to your business to make sure that you streamline operations, drive performance, and generate profits fast. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenEhrlich.com or by calling me at
475-333-2173. You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so please help them on their dreams. The one they picks, the one you'll know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them inside and know they love you.
All right, everybody. That was Ron E.G.
Thank you.
He's here to play us in. I'm Noreen Ehrlich, and this is Defiant Hustle Radio, and you have the better part of the show. I'm such a nerd. At least a part of me is a complete nerd, and so I get fascinated by this information. Ron's shaking his head no. Well, I'm talking about artificial intelligence and its impact on our lives, but also on our jobs. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the healthcare community. I'm taking the information from a book, gosh, I've got papers everywhere, called The Rise of Robots by Martin Ford, who is an American futurist. And he says, technology and the threat of a jobless future. So in the healthcare industry, well, I guess what the doctors are facing, especially at the hospitals and the large organizations, is that there's so much information that could be used to treat or diagnose, but it's impossible for them to assimilate all the information. Apparently, 1.5 million people in the United States are harmed by medication errors each year alone, which results in an additional $3.5 billion of annual treatment, just to correct that. 98,000 patients die in the U.S. from issues around being misdiagnosed. So there are now algorithms that the doctors can use, like one called Medline, which is assimilating all the information from the United States National Library of Medicine. And that indexes Medline indexes over 5,600 separate journals. I guess all these journals are publishing all this information, but what good is that information? What's going on? My nose. Oh, sorry, folks. My nose is bleeding. I've got the coronavirus. So Medline indexes over 5,600 separate journals. And so there's positives and negatives to this. Of course, there's positives, and the doctors can use these informations even on iPads to diagnose and treat their patients. But what is also happening is, in some cases, the algorithm is so good that you don't need these highly educated doctors. And what the education system is doing is training lower educated competition. And this lower educated competition is being trained just to read certain data off of these algorithms, off of these machines, and diagnose and treat the patient. So the well-educated doctor gets cut out of the loop, and I imagine that their salaries start to go down over time. These less trained, arguably younger workers are coming in, and they're just being trained to work on certain systems and diagnose it and treat, and so your value goes down.
That's kind of scary.
It's happening already. Mm-hmm. It's happening already. There's some people that make money. I know that they, in my business where there's a lot of social media marketing, there's some people that just have jobs they've created. I don't know what courses they've taken, but like just how to clean up your LinkedIn account. And they'll charge, let's say, $350 or whatever their case may be to just go in and clean up your LinkedIn account. But that's not the end of the world. But this is, well, I'm thinking about doctors. You think about, for example, financial brokers. You don't need a broker, arguably. Not everybody needs a broker to tell them where to invest their money anymore. Mm-hmm. So why pay these brokers fees when you could just go on and have something do a trend analysis basically on the way you've been investing. Also, I think about lawyers. My understanding is that law, people are going to be able to figure out whether they have a good case by going through algorithms and not having to go for a consultation with a lawyer. So that's another example people are doing. You think about QuickBooks. You know, I have a CPA license, but QuickBooks and these tax programs are they're helping the professionals, but they're also making it that much easier for the general public to go out there and do the work themselves.
Like TurboTax.
Yeah. There are some interesting things coming from the robotics world. Healthcare robots are coming to help, and it's apparently more prevalent over in Japan, where there's a large robotics culture over there and a lot of aging people. So they have elderly care robots that will give you your medicine and potentially even wash you down and take care of you. There is something that's happening, I don't know enough about it, but I did a little bit of research, where doctors are getting pushed away from a fee-based system into something called an accountable care system. An accountable care system. So what this is doing, and I imagine it'll go past doctors too, the doctors get paid, they get reimbursed based on they have to keep track of everything very carefully, and the people who would pay them, like the government institutions or the insurance institutions, are going to reimburse the doctors based on accountable care, which ties their payment to quality performance, patient outcomes, and a reduction in spending overall. So that's another shift that's moving away. I think I've talked about on this show, I have a client who is a physical therapist, and she's struggling a bit, but she has to constantly put things on the computer, which she's a very good physical therapist. She used to run the organization, but now she's constantly having to go back and put things into the computer, and the computer is figuring out exactly how much time you're spending with each patient, how much you cost, and it's really there to help the patient but also drive down spending. Also in the healthcare industry, you've got robot-assisted surgery. Johnson & Johnson has something called Sedasys. Sedasys, S-E-D-A-Y-S-Y-S, which automates the sedation of patients undergoing colonoscopies. And just by this machine taking the place of anesthesiologists, which in this case might cost $600 for a colonoscopy, $1,000, this Sedasys is saving the healthcare industry over $1 billion in costs per year. Another example of positive things that are happening is in the Ukraine. They have apps that work with the deaf to help the deaf or the hearing impaired use sensory, quote unquote, sensory enhancements to help them speak. So they're able to use sign language and writing to communicate now, and the apps will help them communicate in English. And my understanding is that same app is starting to work its way over into even into schools where young people can't communicate like adults just yet. So there's a lot of interesting things happening. I wanted to talk about the impact on higher education. As we know, higher education, most people, you're told you have to get a bachelor's degree. Now you're being told you have to get a master's degree. And we have a tendency to blame the students or the teachers when the people don't get jobs after they get out of school. And they have this mounting debts from going to school and they can't get the jobs. There are diminishing returns to going to school for higher education because the machines are taking over and because you could go and get trained specifically to learn something. And even if you just learn how to use the app, for example, that the doctors are now using to diagnose patients, if you get trained just to learn how to use that, you could get out into the workforce and work for a little while. And then if you decide you want to advance from there, you go out at that time and learn the next thing you have to learn instead of spending 4 years getting an advanced degree. So it's going to be our new society is going to be a very much go with the flow and not as fixed as it's been before. So you're going to what I call hustle. You're going to learn what you need to learn at the time you need to learn it. And you're going to have to learn how to be secure by trusting that you'll be able to handle it at the time that you need to be able to handle it and that the money will show up at the time you need the money to show up. The old paradigm of going to work for blank years and taking a pension, all that stuff, I think you can start to say bye-bye to that. So there are diminishing returns around higher education. And that's why, as I started to read through some of these books, when you hear Andrew Yang, who ran for the Democratic nomination, talking about giving people, I think he said he was going to give everybody $1,000. Yes, Ron, you're shaking your head. Yeah. Yes. The argument of Andrew Yang, I didn't go back and read the book. I didn't study it. I'm not here to boost his campaign. He's out of the campaign. But the argument is that if people aren't afraid, if people are not making decisions from a place of fear, if they just have enough money to be secure in life, they can actually add value to society. They can come up with new ways to improve on things that are outdated. And so there's the argument, I think, by the younger generations that as automation starts to shift the workforce, and it's definitely happening and it's only going to get faster and faster, that if we can keep those among us secure by giving them money instead of having them spend a lot of money to go get a higher education and then not be able to get a job, that those people feel secure. They're not making poor decisions from a place of fear, and they can be a contributor to the society instead of somebody who starts draining it. I did see an interesting fact that said as many, even STEM students, right? Science, technology, engineering, and math. Even these students, as many as one-third of these STEM students are coming out of school and still not finding jobs. You have something to say, Ron? We got Ron E.G. here.
Ronnie G. Well, going back to the healthcare in Japan, where they're using robots.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Patch Adams.
That was with
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, yeah. I did see
when it. When he's going through with the doctor, and they have a patient on the stretcher, and they're referring to, this patient has diabetic sores, and Patch Adams says, why don't you just ask the patient's name? It's taking the personable attributes away by using a robot. There's no personal.
They're actually, okay, so I had my head in too many things, and I have a tendency to drop off too many facts. But you know something, Ron, they're creating, just like that narrative story, the one that writes the article, they're creating the robots to take on human aspects. One of the futurists says that men are going to fall in love with their robots because now they're making robots that will dote on them. You guys are so strange. That will dote on them, and that are even very sexual, like they're shaped like these impossible, beautiful human beings. And so once they start to take on personalities, women will, I don't know what women are going to do, but the healthcare workers that they're creating in Japan, the healthcare robots, I should say, are, there's going to be an interaction that starts to happen where, not unlike your child or your pet starts to understand you as the human better, the technology is going to start to understand you better and better, and will start to take on some human aspects, and they're driving it so that they start to talk to you like they care about you. There was that movie that Joaquin Phoenix was in called Her, where he falls in love with the computer. This is supposed to be legitimately happening.
So they have a bedside manner.
They do have there. If they don't yet, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening. So brace yourself. So what else? Okay, if we go over into what is going on with consumers. So we are going into a new economic paradigm, folks. And so with consumers, especially as we start to carve out the middle class and we have either the non-working people or the people who are working for the gig economies, the Uber drivers in this case, or the lower paid. And then you have on top of that the people who are running the organizations. And the big organizations around the world seem to be gobbling up all the middle level organizations, right? And forming giant banks again, and forming, Google, and I don't know what Google owns, but I know Facebook took over Instagram. And so you've got these giant organizations and the people making money. You've got the other people down at the bottom working for them, and you have this giant machine in the middle. As people start to make less, they start to realize that they need less. And so there's, I'm not saying this. I'm talking about what I read. But it makes sense that people will stop spending as much money. Some of the automation will make it easier to purchase things because it'll make it cheaper. But people will start to spend less money. Like the constant increase under the old paradigm of people with rising incomes, right? We're told to go out there and keep pushing and making more and more money. But this has become unsustainable because at some point, there's not going to be any consumer demand left. Even the wealthy people can only buy so many cars and so many houses. Ron, what are you doing?
No, I'm trying to say that I see it every day.
What do you see?
Because I've been with Jeep Chrysler Dodge City now for 20 years and 4 months. And I see what you're saying as far as, you know, everybody's cutting back.
Everybody's cutting back now.
Yeah, I mean, people that used to drive Grand Cherokees are now going to Cherokees and Compasses.
Right.
And because of the economy.
The cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get scared of coronavirus, but, and I'm not saying, well, don't get scared. That's not a good plan. We have to also, this will be a good test to see if we can learn not to react and instead try and make decisions around this coronavirus from a place of stability. But anyway, that's another story. Okay. But there is consumers are starting to turn away from purchases that are unnecessary. And even the rich can only buy so many Jeeps or so many houses. And the other trend that you should start to see is that this relentless borrowing that Americans are used to will become unsustainable if their incomes are not – if the cost of everything is going down and their incomes – if the cost of everything is going up, I apologize, and their incomes are going down. You'll even start to see more and more job equality in the short run, job loss. And then and you've seen this too, folks – people who are just permanently out of work and they figured out how to get by, I'm not sure what they're doing, but they're just permanently out of work. And to be in debt and out of work, or to be just sort of making money driving Uber and this and that, I'm sorry, Uber, I just don't know what example to give that other people will understand, is to have debt building up on that will become unmanageable. So things that we consider luxuries, or even things we sort of think we need, like expensive shampoos and fancy haircuts and stuff like that, it's going to start to go away. And that should drive the prices down of everything. So there's a collapse that's going on, at least at some levels of society. Let's see. There will be a new thinking through what's important to us. So it will come back to us figuring out what we really value, even coming back into our communities. I think the coronavirus is a good example of something that's going to drive us back towards what's important to us, caring for each other, seeing that the whole world's connected, and also what can we do without going to China? Do we need to get our vegetables from Peru, or can we just sort of go someplace in the back country here in Connecticut and get our food? So in the technologies industry and in other industries of the future, there's some interesting things coming. This is coming from a different book by the book is called Industries of the Future, and it's by Alec Ross. And he is an expert on innovation. I think he used to work with the Hillary Clinton campaign, and he went all over the world with – I don't know if it was the campaign. I apologize. I don't know. He worked with Hillary Clinton, her administration, or something around it, but he went around the world, so he learned a lot. And so he wrote a book about the industries of the future, and he talks about 3D printing. Have you heard of 3D printing? Yes.
Yes.
So apparently 3D printing is also known as additive manufacturing. And so what 3D printing is, for those who don't know, and I don't exactly know, it employs a computer-controlled printhead that can fabricate solid objects by repeatedly depositing layering of material. So they're using this right now in bioprinting. I don't even know what that is. They're using it to make food. They're using it to make food, and they're using it even to create organs, so for organ transplants. So 3D printing. When these printers are construction-sized, they use it to build homes. They can use it to build office buildings. They can use it to build, like, make really funky architecture in these buildings, put them up as needed, and then take them down when they're not needed. So speaking of things that you will be a flowing, it'll be a flowing culture, to the extent that we need to put up a building, it won't be fixed. It'll be something that we put up and then make it for whatever our needs are at that time and then take it right back down when we don't need it anymore.
Who's got the liability if something goes wrong?
I don't know. I don't think, who knows?
Somebody's got to be liable.
But they're expecting just in construction alone that there would be a loss of about 110 million people. Okay, Ron, here we go.
So where are these people going to get jobs?
They are going to go work in the healthcare industry in interpreting.
Drive Ubers.
They're going to be running around with iPads helping the elderly. Wait a second. No, we're not there yet. Okay. We're going to talk about automated cars.
Oh, okay.
So you said you don't know if Jeep is working on automated cars.
No, personally, I haven't heard it.
Well, the self-driving cars, they should be able to improve safety. Mm-hmm. 11 million people are in accidents in the United States each year. Apparently, 34,000 of them are killed in car accidents each year. So self-driving cars, which are being worked on.
Tesla has it.
They have the self-driving mm-hmm. car?
Yeah.
It's been released?
They tested it. I hate to tell you this, but the first day the car was driving itself, got into an accident,
I heard that.
A bus.
Well, there's even on a state-by-state basis, the states are deciding whether they're letting in the testing of these cars. But it's interesting because the cars will be able to speak to each other, and so they'll be able to collaborate and communicate with each other. And one of the ideas for the cars is that they'll travel in convoys to save fuel, not unlike birds who travel together and they get behind the main bird in order to get, I don't know exactly
they
how.
They flock together.
Right, they flock together. The cars are going to flock together in order to save time and save fuel. More and more, we won't even be buying cars, so you better brace yourself, Ron, because we're just going to call for cars when we need them. Already, there's way too many cars, there's way too many boats, there's too many houses, and that's why you're seeing the rise of these Uber and rent-a-car and rent-a-boat and Airbnb.
Yeah. Zipcar.
Right. Mm-hmm. There will be higher utilization of the cars, so the cars that are out there will be used more because they'll be shared, and there'll be less of a need for parking in towns and cities. So when you take away the need for parking in cities, this revolutionizes the real estate market because there's so much more space available, and you don't need people to have to come in. They'll just get dropped off by their car, and the car will go off and pick up the next customer. There's going to be designs for pods that will help groups of people go, carry groups of people, pods. And the cars in these pods are going to be environmentally friendly. And lastly, I want to say we're going into an economy of trust. As we work on social media and we start to communicate with each other and do business on social media, you see more and more testimonials, whether it's Airbnb, eBay, Uber. People want to know that they can trust the people that they're working with, so they're looking for some way to validate it. So if you're out there and you're running a business on social media and you're putting it out there, make sure that you are sending a message that you can be trusted and working in your communities. This is Noreen Ehrlich. This is Defiant Hustle Radio. I'll talk to you next week with Senator Alex Kasser. Go ahead, Ron, play us out.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies, and all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Coronavirus funding, Bloomberg backs Biden. I'm Barbara Cusack.